HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome to the Investor Hour podcast. I'm your host, Rahul Goyal. The goal of this podcast is to learn from the best investment minds of our times. We want to learn their backstory, essentially, what makes them, them. We want to learn how they make their decisions in their personal lives. And of course, we want to learn about their core principles of investing. Essentially, a lot of learning that could help you make better decisions in life and investing.
Nilesh Shah is perhaps one of the best debt fund managers India has ever had. Nilesh once told investors in his fund to redeem their monies as the future was likely to be bleak. That's quintessential Nilesh for you. Always focused on his investors, Nilesh is a big believer in the India story. As he puts it, India's GDP grew 10 times in the last 25 years, and he believes that a 10x will happen soon. Listen in to understand how to play this opportunity.
So this is an Investor Hour episode that I've been wanting to do for a
long time.
Long time. And yes, primarily because when I sort of moved to Bombay and took up employment at the same company, so one of the things we were doing was studying mutual funds also and putting out research apart from stocks.
Right.
And I think one of my first discussions and meetings was with Templeton and you guys. And yes, you used to be in Nariman Point in a building
near Sakar Bhavan.
Sakar Bhavan, yeah. That's where I sort of bumped into you guys. And yes, it was eye-opening because what you guys were doing then was very, very pioneering. You guys were laying the foundation for what happened in the next 20 years. So Nilesh, so many thanks for taking our time. We are recording this just around the Diwali holidays.
Yeah.
And I can imagine your attire tells me.
That's how you could see the attire.
You've been keeping busy. So thank you for taking time out. Yeah. Wonderful. So let's start with right from the basics. Tell us about where, you know, you grew up. Tell us about your schooling, your family at home, you know, when you were growing up, the investment environment in your home. Basically, like I always say in the Investor Hour, we're trying to figure out what was it that led to Nilesh becoming Nilesh. So we're going way back. So if you could maybe kick off with that, please.
Sure. So I'm a person of destiny. Okay. I haven't planned much. Destiny has taken me where I am today. I grew up in a chawl system in Kalba Devi Road. If you had seen a movie called Katha, my chawl was similar. Okay. People had small house, but big hearts. You could go into anyone's house. The whole thing was family. And we used to celebrate all festivals together. We were sharing joys and we were sharing each other's sorrow. I lost my father when I was in fourth standard. And clearly that was a big shock to us. I studied in a Gujarati medium school opposite my house. Again, as destiny would have it, I thought I will start working and earn. And my principal said that, no, you will study. And as long as you get top rank in your class, I will ensure that your fees are paid. So I studied on scholarships and my ambition was to be top rank in the class so that my next year's fees will be paid. I ended up in Sydenham College, Mumbai. All my friends around me were doing chartered accountants. By then, I had started working, so there was always limited time available for study. Thanks to the friends around me, they will always come and tell me that this is the portion you should study. This is what you get discarded. And I blindly trusted them. And every time I used to score above them. And not even once during my BCom exam, costing exam, or CA exam, my friend complained that we actually teach you what to study and then you end up scoring above me. So thanks to the help of such good friends, I became chartered accountant. Till then, we really didn't have money, so investment was clearly out of question. And whatever money my father left me, we had to invest in very, very safe instruments like bank fixed deposits. Once I cleared my chartered accountancy, you know, that was the time in the early 90s when Harshad Mehta TG was around. I wanted to earn something for my family, and I thought stock market is the best place. I was working in near stock market in a place called Fort Chambers A. Every day in the afternoon when you go down, you will hear lots of noise. And I borrowed some money to invest in market and lost everything. That was, in the hindsight, again, destiny. I lost all my money, though in those days they were very big for me, but it gave me a very valuable experience.
Interesting.
Then I started studying the market. I was number one chartered, I was gold medalist chartered accountant in my exam.
Wow.
So we got a lot of offers from companies. I was about to join one manufacturing company. And while going to meet the big man in that company, in that campus, he advised me that, look, Nilesh, a person like you should be going into financial markets, which are expanding. If you come here on this corporate side, you'll have a very peaceful life. A bus will pick you up from your Borivali home to our campus and take you back. Your whole life will be confined in this campus. Go out and explore. And in case you don't get any job in outside world, don't worry, come back here, I'll take you.
Wow.
It was, again, destiny. Someone pushed me in the right direction. I came to ICICI. I entered ICICI with a lot of pride that I am number one gold medalist chartered accountant. And I met some friends who were far more knowledgeable than me and who were far more humble than me. They not only gave me knowledge, but they also gave me wisdom. Even today, when I am confused about markets, these are the people whom I run to. And even today, they guide me with the same passion which they had in those days. So again, destiny, I got very, very good guidance, teachers who really nurtured me. I was dabbling in fixed income market then. Post 91, you know, crisis, fixed income markets were in complete disarray. But again, you know, destiny, there was vacuum at the top and people who were working at the bottom got sucked up. The benefit of ICICI Securities work environment and tie up with JP Morgan gave you huge knowledge. I was a chartered accountant, but my, you know, base was not necessarily that good. Destiny took me to JP Morgan's Global Financial Management Program. Again, it gave experience of Wall Street and the technicals around interest rates, options, futures, derivatives, developed markets trading. Those 3 months again changed orbit of my knowledge, made me more inquisitive. And that's how the journey began. I haven't planned anything in particular, but I'm so lucky that at every stage, there is always a guidance available and they push me towards right direction.
Wow. I think that's so uplifting to hear. And, you know, thinking about the principal in the school, what a brilliant way to nudge someone to do well, right? And of course, all the journey that you've described, very, very uplifting. Thank you for sharing that, Dinesh. You mentioned, of course, the money was short, so you were not investing and it was like FDs. But those days were good for FDs, I assume. They would have been double-digit returns?
Yes, the returns were good, no doubt about it. But at that point of time, you only wanted security because your monthly expenditure will be run out of that. My mother used to work so that we could, we did not draw from those reserves. My elder brother started working. I started working. So again, while I may narrate it and it may look like a hard life, but thanks to the chawl system, we never had to worry about our next meal.
Like you said, small houses, big hearts.
Absolutely. On a day when, you know, we will not cook, someone will figure out from outside and then they'll provide us food. So it was a fantastic experience. We never had to worry about the future, even in that environment. And that's the power of positivity. That's why I'm always optimistic about life, because in the worst scenario, you always get the best of people.
Wow, wonderful. Wonderful to hear that. You mentioned something about Harshad Mehta Teji. So I'm assuming you had done your... when did you finish your charter accountancy?
So I finished it in November 91.
Oh, wow.
That was the time when, you know, Teji had begun. It had not yet ended.
It is so perfectly timed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mr. Gold medalist, go to the market and learn.
I thought making money was buying stock and selling and taking money home, like so many other, you know, traders like me.
So how was the experience? Because I remember those days, they used to be curve trading also, right? All around the stock market, people are buying. Yes. Of course, they were inside also. They were outside also. So tell us a little bit about that experience. And if you can share the name of the stocks in which you lost money, that'll be interesting.
So there, it was complete Wild West. Mm-hmm. Bandho was official part of the jargon. Stock payment crisis was official part of the jargon. Company circle buying was official part of the jargon. Patavat was official part of the jargon. Jota Fatak was curb trading of options.
Okay.
You know, Raja Bahadur mentioned compound was famous for that thing. In IPOs, you could apply after closure, looking at what the subscription is and what your allotment chances will be. Refunds of IPOs was a big issue. And, you know, you'll have to follow up with registrar for many days if you didn't receive money at the first go. There was rampant, you know, cornering and manipulation in market. No matter what you bought, when you bought, it always ended up being at the highest price of the day.
Yeah.
And no matter what you sold, when you sold, it was always at the lowest price of the day. And this was justified as garo or the difference. So this was complete Wild West where traders, investors were going to get butchered. And some of the bigger guys will make money. Compared to that, what we see today, it's a significant improvement.
Oh.
And, you know, like I lost money on all kinds of stocks. I wouldn't like to embarrass myself by remembering that. But they were all Kachra stocks.
Yeah. Did you get into the Harshad Mehta stocks or you were like anything goes?
All kind of Kachra stocks I bought. I had no idea what their business was. I had no idea what were their registered office or valuation. I just bought because someone said, buy this, it's going to go up. I trusted that person. I didn't exercise my judgment. And no wonder a fool and his money cannot stay together for long.
So the Harshad Mehta, I think, peaked out in September 92, if I remember, roughly.
Absolutely.
And then that was quickly followed after another couple of years with a big FII rally, right? It took the market to a near all-time high or all-time high then. So what had happened after that? So after you lost money in the Harshad Mehta, you had joined ICICI Securities by then?
Yes.
This was the time
when markets were booming. And around the same time, an institution called Controller of Capital Issues was abolished. So I joined in ICICI Merchant Banking Division that was spun off to JP Morgan joint venture called ICICI Securities. When I was working in ICICI Merchant Banking Division, we were helping companies raise capital. And because there was CCI abolition, now there was free pricing. Every company wanted to raise money and they wanted the maximum price possible. Market was Wild West and investors were gullible because in the past, whenever they applied in IPO, they always made money because under CCI formula, your IPOs were underpriced. Investors didn't realize that now IPOs are not underpriced. They kept on applying into IPOs without looking at fundamentals or valuations. And all the IPOs which I managed in that time period, I don't think so any one of them is quoting at a price higher today than what price I had issued them then, 30 years back.
Oh my God.
So you can imagine how mispriced IPOs were.
Wow.
But fortunately, by now I had started understanding something on the market. And that's where I realized that this game is not going to go long. Mm-hmm. Investors are losing money. Issuers are taking advantage of their memory, experience, or the greed. And this can't last long. That's where I got a chance, again by destiny. I was going down in lift with two of my bosses in front. And they were talking among each other that, whom should we send to Singapore for FX training? I immediately picked up and said, look, I'm willing to go to Singapore. I'll learn FX. So they said, okay, if you are so enthusiastic, go ahead, go and do a 3-month stint over there. I went to Singapore for the first time. This was my first, travel abroad. I was put on JP Morgan's trading desk. I was first time meeting Singaporeans, Chinese, Koreans, and various other ethnicities. Singapore was a much bigger and developed market than India. But by the time my 3-4 month stint ended up, the CEO there rated me as top 5% of JP Morgan's staff worldwide.
Wow.
Again, destiny. I came back to India. I declined his offer of staying in Singapore. I came back to India because my family was here. And then the license for FX came into ICICI, not into ICICI Securities, where my job was. So I said, I want to be with ISEC, where there's a foreign company as a partner. And forget foreign exchange, I'll focus on fixed income market. That's how my journey in fixed income began. But fortunately, by then, I had got some equity experience, some currency experience. And then fixed income, I was a more well-rounded personality. The JP Morgan experience in Singapore, as well as Global Financial Management Program, again, opened up your thought process to the outside world. Those exposure were invaluable in developing me.
Yeah. I'm not surprised you said you are top 5% of JP Morgan, because by now there's a pattern.
No, we had a tradition to follow. So in all GFM programs, GFM 1 to 25 to 50, there always used to be a caption. So we normally used to send 2 or 3 people. So the whole class average X and the whole class average removing Indians will be X minus something. So we all had a target that outperforming the class is given. How much we can outperform, that's the only thing we have to measure.
Wow. Nice. So along this way, when did you get around to making your first serious investment? Because now you'd got tremendous exposure. You'd learned by making your mistakes. You'd been in an environment where you were learning. You'd seen multiple bull markets. You'd seen 92, 94 IPOs. So how did that turn out?
My second thing, which happened, in the initial phase of my ICICI career, there was an IPO of Morgan Stanley.
Morgan Stanley Growth Fund.
This was a mutual fund IPO. But in those days, people thought it was probably something else. And in the gray market, it started trading at a huge premium. by now we had become smart enough to realize that this cannot remain for long. So me and my friends at ISAC started shorting Morgan Stanley Growth Fund in gray market.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes, we captured that very nicely because we knew, and in those days, Rahul, there used to be 6% transaction charges. So 10 rupee will open at 940 by definition. And people were buying at 60 rupees, 70 rupees, and we were more than happy to sell. From 60, 70 rupees all the way to probably maybe 10 rupee, 12 rupee, I kept on selling. Unfortunately, it was only book profit because settlement never happened.
Oh, okay.
That was again a learning that, you know, even if you pick up the right trend, you need to execute it in real platform. You can't go to gray market and do it. So this time I didn't lose money, but I lose a lot of profit. Again, you know, thanks to the ISAC friends, they all take it on their stride. Then, you know, we had small savings and we were looking to invest. We were still not a long-term investor. We were all short-term traders. But now I had the advantage of working with a very, very knowledgeable group of people. They were able to pick up right stocks. They were able to, you know, pick up right trends. And slowly and steadily, that journey began. Those were profitable trades. I think after joining ISAC, bearing a Morgan Stanley kind of gray market disaster, almost every time we were making money.
So I don't know whether our listeners and viewers know this whole Morgan Stanley Growth Fund story, but when it was launched, it was like a revolution happening in India, private sector, Morgan Stanley Mutual Fund. And you were there, so you could corroborate this. They said that the queue for the application started at the Bombay Stock Exchange and ended up at Churchgate, which yes. is like probably a kilometer down the road or something like that. So there was an absolute craze. I was in school that time. I think I was in high school or whatever, class 10. And even in my native place, there was the only talk in town was Morgan Stanley Growth Fund. And people were buying up at a premium, you're right.
Yeah.
Thank God I didn't have money then. Even I would have ended up buying. There was so much, so much interest around that. Okay. So you are now at ICICI. You moved to bonds, right? You said. And then, of course, this is the eve, kind of the eve of the big TMT bubble, if you will. How did that play out for you?
So by then, you know, I had done enough in bond market and I was looking for a slightly higher salary. At that point of time, Templeton offer had come and I started my career in 97 in Templeton on fixed income management. We raised about 35 crore in Templeton India income fund issue.
Very large by those standards.
It was okay, not very large, but it was decent sum of money to raise for a foreign brand. And Templeton actually taught me about mutual funds. You know, we were still not aware of what mutual fund was. We were by then started knowing how to manage money in fixed income market. But it was not only about management, it was also about communication to investors. And we were going all over the place with distributors, brokers, investors. Portfolio management was consuming far less time and sales was consuming far more time. And we were always told to be, you know, presenting the positive side as well as the negative side. We were always told, you know, to talk honestly with the customer. I think over that phase, we would have met lots of investors who had burned their fingers and hand, entire body in, you know, Morgan Stanley NFO. Yeah. And there was resistance to invest in mutual funds. But fortunately, there were very good set of fixed income fund managers. Bala was there from Birla. He was like our Bhishma Pitama. There were people in ICICI Prudential, Alliance, DSP, and all of us were, you know, passing the same message. All of us were doing a very good job in managing money on the portfolio side. And slowly and steadily, the credibility started building. We were growing rapidly. Then, you know, TMT bubble began. Now, Templeton was a value style fund. We took a call that this is bubble, this is becoming expansive, this is going beyond rationality. Now, obviously, you don't know how to time such calls. There were periods where, you know, markets continued to rise, defying rationality. But we were very clear on what we needed to convey. And eventually the bubble busted. This was almost repeat of 1992. Companies who were changing just their name from XYZ Finance to XYZ Technology, their share used to jump. Companies were trading at crazy valuation. And retail investors was just blindly following, saying that this is what is happening in NASDAQ. So it must be happening in India. But once the bubble busted, men got separated from boys. I think there were two fund managers, Dr. Mark Mobius on Templeton and Prashant Jain at HDFC Mutual Fund, whose funds didn't fall as much. And in fact, you know, they were the guys who were communicating that telecom, media, and technology is a bubble. Again, that phase was the phase where we lost investors' confidence. I remember opposite Siddhivinayak Mandir Junction, there was a poster put up of various fund managers who had, you know, lost money. Some technology funds were down 70-80%. Now, by then I was more of a fixed income fund manager, and, you know, people were still complaining about what happened in TMT. Fast forward to 2003, we had a fantastic track record on fixed income outperforming equity for 7-8 years. People were throwing money at us because last 3 years return in equity were negative or negligible. And then we had to take a call because interest rates had come down from 14% to 5%. Should we take money because it's powering in? Or should we go and tell investors that, look, now don't expect that kind of return? Fortunately, we took that call. Templeton backed me. And we started telling investors that this is not the time to come into bond fund. In fact, please redeem. I remember my fund was probably 4,000-6,000 crore. And it came down by about 90%. We were telling people to move into liquid fund, floating rate fund. We were telling people to go into equity. I still remember a client who had come to meet me with some reference from a friend to invest in fixed income. And I said, "Abhi fixed income chodo, equity mein dalo." And he told my friend that, "Arey, tera friend bol raha hai, equity mein laga, and he's the fixed income fund manager." So my friend said that, "Please follow him, he's a very smart person." And this is where the credibility of mutual fund got built. Every single big fixed income player conveyed the same message. We put client interest way ahead of our interest. Every single fund house backed their fund managers. They didn't say that, "Please don't ask customers to redeem. Do what you think is right for customer." And by and large, when the downtrend started in fixed income market, where 10-year yield moved from 5% back to 7-8%, we were able to save our customers. We were able to convey them that this is what will happen. I think that rebuilt the credibility of fixed income and mutual funds.
Yeah. So you know, you're narrating us this episode, the way it happened. But if I was to think about it, you know, there's a one in a million chance someone's going to do this, where they go to someone and say, "Take your money back," because your P&L runs on the AUM. If there's no AUM, there's no fees. There's no fees. There's no growth in salaries and bonuses. So to do the right thing, you know, you obviously had the right intentions and the right values to do that. Yeah, you took a near-term hit, and the fact, and it's worked out. We know that what Nilesh, what you stand for today. But that's a big call, yeah.
More than the person, it was the organization who supported.
Yeah,
there were salespeople who went and complained to my CEO then, saying that you have given us target for the year, and here is the fund manager who is asking people to redeem. And my CEO backed me, saying that if he believes this is the right thing to do, we have to do what is right for customers, because what we'll be losing in the short term will be gaining multiple times that in the long term.
That is nice.
It's a matter of pride for me that a brand like Templeton, which was a multinational brand, foreign brand, which didn't have recognition like many other large players, became the second largest mutual fund in 2004. We were just behind UTI, which was a government company. For a foreign brand to come from nowhere to become second largest mutual fund, it indeed happened, because all throughout that 7-8 years, they were doing what was right for the investors. They never hesitated. They never stopped us. They fully backed us.
Wow. So by now, if I recollect my own journey that time, by now you were the bond fund manager. I'm not saying it because you're on the show. I know it. And after that, I'm sure you'll narrate it to us, but somewhere it forked a little bit where you went beyond bonds and you actually started managing equity. And I don't know, I don't have my timing right, but of course, you know what happened after 2003. There was one of the biggest bull runs we've seen in stocks, which of course culminated with the 2008 period. So tell us, how was that phase of your journey where you had peaked out as a bond fund manager, given the money back, and then I think your shift towards equity started, as you said, for growth
probably. Again, it was destiny. Okay. You had right intention for investors. I could recognize that equity was going to boom and debt was going to not deliver an equal return like in the past. And I wanted to shift from debt to overall equity. I was a rookie in equity. My only track record was as an individual investor, where I had lost all the money to begin with, or as a merchant banker, where again, all the IPOs were below issue price. Fortunately for me, again, my ICICI connection came into play. They had a change in their investment team and they decided to back me. I had zero experience in equity fund management, but they said that, no, we know who you are. We will back you. You'll make some mistakes, but I'm sure over long term, you will work hard enough to work it out. I moved from Templeton to ICICI Prudential. We were working in a Bellard Estate office, a huge heritage building. And, there was so much of expectations because I was a star fund manager, quote unquote, then. And I used to work crazy hours because I wanted to learn about equities. I wanted to also know about ICICI Prudential. And I don't want to name this person, but he sent me two printed booklets. These were all the articles on equity. I had not even met that person, but he had seen me on fixed income side. And when he realized that I'm moving from fixed income to equity, he kind of distilled all his wisdom through those bounded booklets. It was just delivered to me saying that, dear Nilesh, you are starting your journey in equity market. This is what I have learned over the years. Happy reading.
Oh, wow.
I read that over two nights. And that kind of laid the foundation about my equity journey. I had a great team in ICICI Prudential. And we started working on setting up our processes. Kept on building the team, and eventually we became the largest mutual fund in India. This was the first time in financial services where a private sector company overtook a public sector company. In insurance, even today, LIC stands tall over all other insurance companies. In banking, SBI stands tall over all other banks. In general insurance, again, PSUs are fairly large. It was only in the mutual fund way back in, you know, early 2000s, where a private company could overtake public sector mutual fund. This was a great journey where I learned a lot about fund management. The booklet which was given to me by a legendary investor was very, very helpful. And what I had learned in Templeton about processes came very handy. I forgot to mention one incident in Templeton. So, you know, I used to generate double the return of equity, double the return of my peer group. And one day my CEO called me and said, Nilesh, we have to make investment manual. We have to put in place our processes and risk management. And in my arrogance, I replied saying that, hey, I am the risk and I am the risk manager. Anyway, I generate double the return of our peer group. It's because of my performance money is coming in. Why do you need such things like manual and process and risk and blah, blah, blah? He could have easily sacked me then and there itself. But again, destiny intervened. He took me out aside and said, Nilesh, tomorrow this fund will become 10 times more than what it is today. Then you won't be a trader come fund manager come CIO. You will be truly a CIO. You will have people working below you. Then will you want this kind of laissez-faire, this kind of wild west, or would you like to put in place processes and structure? I could realize what he was talking and I said, yes, I will now make an investment manual. I'll figure out how the process works, because when the amount gets scaled, when we are managing money on behalf of retail investors, we need to demonstrate that we have processes. We know how to make money. It's not by luck, it's by design. And that episode, that knowledge which I gathered in Templeton, thanks to my very really sincere bosses, has helped me all throughout in my career.
So in how did you take that 2007-8 period, the spike and the crash? How were you placed? How did that pan out for you?
So again, you know, thanks to booming market and the great team which I had in ICICI Prudential and the marketing and sales machine at iPro, we were growing very rapidly. We had launched an infrastructure fund which had delivered great performance in 2007. Around the time of September 2007, one of our peer group launched a close-ended infrastructure fund and collected a lot of money. Mm-hmm. There was immense pressure on us also to launch a close-ended infrastructure fund, because our open-ended infrastructure was the largest and the best, and investors were dying to invest into it. By September 2007, we were worried about the direction of the market. We thought markets are running way ahead of its fundamental. It's becoming expensive. And I told my boss that we should not be launching infrastructure fund. It doesn't look right. Without a second, he said, okay, if you say so. My sales guys were behind him for, you know, pushing him to launch an infrastructure fund, because they could have raised a lot of money. And me and my team took a call that we don't want to launch. From September 2007 to May 2008, we didn't launch a single NFO.
Wow. And that was the NFO boom period.
Everyone was raising money and everyone was asking us, why are we not raising money? And we kept on saying that, you know, we think markets have become expensive. I didn't have the courage, like Templeton, to, you know, pay back everyone in cash, because in equity, you know, you never know, the time horizon could be longer, and, you know, over 5 year, 10 year period, equity could be much higher. So it's the short term volatility which you have to capture, and which is why we didn't issue any NFO during that period. as the luck would have it, in May 2008, we launched a fund. If I remember correctly, it is ICICI Prudential Focused Fund.
Okay.
By September 2008, the fund was down, but we could never predict Lehman crisis. Now, by September 2008, we would have lost 30-40% of our investors' money. The memories of 2000 was coming back. And we took a call that this time we will go and face the investors. We will not hide. We were working like crazy. There were days when I have not gone home. I have next day begin the work in same clothes. But we were reaching out to every single investor, every single distributor, and explaining that what is happening wrong is outside in US. In India, things are not looking as bad. The communication and the honesty with which we were communicating, and somewhere the 2003-2004 episode of returning money in fixed income, not launching NFOs between September 07 to May 08, it all came together. Either people gave us more money to invest during that correction, or they stayed invested. Some people obviously panicked and redeemed.
Yeah.
But by the God's grace, whatever we communicated during 2008 crisis, subprime crisis, by 2009-2010 turned out to be true. It became a golden opportunity for people to make money. And more importantly, it also enhanced our credibility that, okay, here are the bunch of people who are not trying to be predictor of the market. If someone will ask us, what do you think will happen in the market tomorrow? We'll say, we don't know. We can play for long term. We can't play for short term. We can vouch for managements. We can't vouch for market. We can go wrong on management. We will make mistakes, but we will ensure that we don't repeat those mistakes. And eventually, September 2008 subprime crisis, I think mutual fund industry came out very well because they were communicating honestly the rightful thing. So somewhere slowly a foundation was built where our trust, our credibility was going up.
That was a very interesting phase, because I don't have the data for it, but I think what happened is that is the time at which the industry forked, where the players who had played it right just broke away and became a different size altogether. So earlier you had a lot of AMCs up to 20,000 crores, 30,000 crores. And after that, it's just that some reached hundreds of thousands of crores and the others just stayed put. And I guess, you know, that's rightly deserved. If you respect people and treat them with, you know, honest intentions, the money should come back. So we're going to leapfrog 10 years, 10, 11, 12 years, and come to the pandemic. Now you're at Kotak, of course, you're at Kotak. And I spoke to Pankaj for this podcast sometime back. And I was telling him one of the reasons I wanted to definitely talk to him is because I've seen his fund, et cetera, but one of my colleagues who studies funds told me that if you had to rate fund houses purely by their focus on stock picking, you know, Kotak would be one or two. So be sure you're talking to them. So I said, I'll do Pankaj. Then, of course, I was so glad to have you. So Kotak apparently has a very good process, which people recognize and all that is happening. So what did the pandemic do for you guys in March 2020 when it hit? Again, that was something no one saw coming, kind of. There were some whispers, if you will. How did that play out for you?
Compared to Lehman, there were signs visible on COVID, but unfortunately, we fell short of recognizing it. Now, I could always give an excuse that I'm not a medical expert and, you know, forget me, everyone in the world also didn't recognize it. But at least I have to be fair to myself that we failed to understand the enormousness of that crisis. There was not only market crisis or investor and distributor crisis, but also business crisis. Overnight, we moved from coming office and working together to offline working. our processes, our systems, our operations had to overnight jump to online. And this was the time when you didn't want to stop your redemptions, not because you didn't have money. You had money, but you also need to ensure that it reached out to the investors. So there was tremendous pressure on all front. Markets were behaving volatile. Investors and distributors were worried. Operationally, we had to go through a lot of challenges. Fortunately, at Kotak Mutual Fund, I had a great team. My CEO took the entire responsibility of ensuring a smooth transition. My investment team took the pain of the market, and I was just left with one thing: please communicate with the investors. Suddenly, you know, from talking to 100, 200, 250 investors, thanks to digital medium, we were talking to sometimes 5,000 and 7,000 investors. There were days when some people wanted to speak in Hindi and some people wanted to speak in English. If you start speaking in English in the chat box, there will be, you know, lots of comments. Why are you not speaking Hindi? If you start speaking Hindi, a lot of people will complain saying that we can't understand what you're pronouncing. So there were lots of challenges. There were lots of troubles. But again, one thing, we went out to answer every single call. Our message was same. Don't panic. We don't know what's going to happen. But market has discounted lots of negatives. Please remain invested and buy on correction. We never could pick up 7,500 was the bottom of the market. But all throughout below 9,000, 9,500, Nifty to 7,500 and back above, we kept on advising investors to buy. We were overweight equity almost till May 2021. And again, investors started trusting us, started believing in us, because what we narrated started happening in future. And this is the best part now. Today also, we have seen correction. Now that concern, that worry is missing. Most people are very, very comfortable. They know markets will go up and down, but if they remain invested in a disciplined manner, they'll achieve their financial freedom. From being an exotic part of an individual's portfolio, mutual funds have moved to the core part of their portfolio. We are now not just managing money or trust and confidence of people, we are also managing their dreams and aspirations.
So that's a change even I have noticed over the years, that they, even if there's a little bit of fear, there is no panic selling, if you will. Of course, there is a segment of the market which is always panicking, but you don't have the kind of sell-offs, at least this time around in 2022, like we've had in the past, where people are wanting to get out at, you know, no matter what the cost. We've been, I think from March onwards this year, Jan onwards, we've been through like a, it's been a roller coaster ride. And from what I can see in the data, you know, the SIPs are continuing to come. Even I think the stocks have, you know, a lot of investor money in solid stocks has remained, which is good. I think it's a healthy sign, right? People are focusing on the long term. They understand markets go through volatile periods, which is a good thing for the market, maturing of the capital markets.
Again, it's combination of multiple factors. First, SEBI has ensured that the wild west of 90s is no longer there.
Yeah.
If I ask today's generation, do you know what Garo means, what Vando means, what payment crisis means, what company circle buying means, they'll faint ignorance for right reason, because those things don't exist. It's like dinosaur. You don't know about them because they don't exist. Second, SEBI took a wonderful step of, you know, providing MFI with investor education fund. With that, we went out talking about mutual fund sahi hai. It started reaching out to, let's say, rich to middle class to poor, from urban India to semi-urban to rural India, from India to Bharat. Mutual funds became a mass market product. More importantly, it was being right sold. Third, by now, we also acquired a critical mass of distributors. Majority of distributors bearing few black ships were always working for customer. They were handholding them. They were selling right product to them. They were selling, you know, right knowledge to them. Combination of regulator support, distributors' hard work, and our performance has ensured that now there are investors in mutual fund rather than traders.
Yeah, that's a big change. You're right. The youngsters won't understand what we've seen in our lives. They'll have to see that series on Harshad Mehta to understand in the ring how people Absolutely. Are buying, selling, and all that. Okay, so I think all our viewers and I've got a good perspective of your journey over the years. A phenomenal journey. Now I'm going to try and extract something which we can use, kind of. I want to touch on bonds and fixed income. And primarily because typically that tends to be a no-brainer decision. People typically go into the FD in the bank, or incrementally they do the income funds, et cetera, et cetera. When you think of how people should plan a fixed income portfolio, like if they are aiming to get a certain cash flow from it or whatever the purpose may be, how would you advise that people think about it? Like if I was to just quickly switch to stocks, they'd say, make sure you don't have more than 10, 20 stocks. Or, you know, be sure you studied the management, etc. When people are thinking of bonds and deposits, how would you suggest people think about it?
So one, they must remember that return of principal is more important than return on principal. You come to the fixed income market for safety, liquidity, and then return. I have always followed this SLR principle, safety, liquidity, and return. And again, this hasn't come cheap to me. In Templeton, a couple of investments went dud. And, you know, we realized the value of principal return is more important than return on principal. So please remember to invest in solid companies rated AAA, AA+, higher ratings. Don't get lured by return. Please focus on the issuer quality. The second, fixed income is part of your asset allocation. We all know in equities in the long term, you will make more money than fixed income. But people many a times don't end up doing that because when markets are down, they panic and they end up redeeming. So please always maintain an asset allocation whereby you have some money in equity, some money in gold and real estate, some money in commodities, some money in fixed income. And whenever your equity market does well, you'll have to book some profit to come into fixed income or other categories. And whenever markets are correcting, you will take some money out of fixed income to invest into equity. So think of fixed income as return of principal more important than return on principal, safety, liquidity, and return in that priority. And be flexible on asset allocation to go up or down on fixed income.
That's nice. You mentioned asset allocation. How does Nilesh do his asset allocation? How do you think about your personal asset allocation?
So I have a lot of restrictions because of my job. 20% of my salary post-tax goes into skin in the game compliance. I put 10% of my money in NPS as permitted.
NPS would be the government
pension scheme. And I also get ESOPs, which I have to exercise. So effectively, I'm not able to maintain asset allocation as much as I would have loved to maintain. That's the limitations of my job. I have found the next best solution, be a long-term investor with overweight in equity. I'll have to bear the volatility, like in March 20, when my net worth fell by probably 30-40%. But fair enough, I have the ability to bear that pain. So I'm far more overweight equity compared to other asset classes. And I'm not able to do as much asset allocation as I'm advising investors because of the limitation of my job.
I understand. What about gold? Do you buy gold, any other asset class, a little bit for exposure, diversification?
So I have bought gold because my mom told me. I have two daughters and my mom said, you know, you have to marry them. So please go ahead and buy gold. So that's my allocation to gold. I haven't used gold as an active asset allocation, but I have enough gold to ensure that my daughters get married.
Great. Ditto for me. Two daughters, and that's why I buy gold.
You don't have a choice. You can't tell your mom that equity is better than gold. And I did once, and she said that, so in the marriage, are they going to wear share certificates? Gold and not happen. I got the message.
But there was some.
Always have the last word.
They always have the last word. And, you know, if I've often thought about this, that in all generations previous to ours, the two investments which did well were property and gold. So they are actually seeing it with a lot of history behind them. A lot of wealth transfer still happens in hard assets.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, gold is an obsession built over centuries and centuries. Yeah. It's not going to get away from our psyche easily.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we have to educate investors and people that when you go and invest in gold, it doesn't really benefit economy as much as when you go and invest in stock. Yeah. Gold is a physical asset. Equity is partnership with Tatas and Birlas and Ambanis and Adanis, the best breed of entrepreneurs in India.
Yeah.
How does a common man think of partnering Tatas? It can only happen via stock market.
That's right. Okay. We spoke about your mother. Your mother's got good advice for you, of course. So you are married and you have two daughters. You just told us. Tell me, how are you educating your daughters about money?
That's
how old are they? If I may ask, how old are they?
So both of them are now teenagers. One will be starting her medical education.
Okay, that's nice.
The other one has graduated from Cornell in biology.
Okay.
So both of them, you know, have their own thought processes. And I have tried to involve them in financial decisions, in financial planning. Both of them have pursued the field of science, not commerce. But again, you know, they have their own mindset.
Yeah.
Today's kids, they take their own decision. So I keep them informed about our financial positions. Both of them are smart enough to recognize that if I'm coming home with my shoulders drooping, market must have corrected today. After 25 years in market, I still feel bad when markets are down and you have lost money. So they could recognize.
Okay. One more question about family. So we, of course, had a long lockdown. And people saved a lot of money. So your wife comes to you and says, hey, Nilesh, I just saved up 1 crore rupees over the last couple of years because we couldn't go to all the movies and restaurants and travel. So I got this 1 crore rupees. What should I do with this? What would be your advice?
So I will tell her that please follow asset allocation. First, define investment objective. Why have you saved this 1 crore? Is it for our retirement? Is it for buying real estate? Is it for our daughter's education? Is it for charity? Whatever it is. Based on the investment objective, now put time horizon. If you're going to give it away in charity, what time horizon you have in mind? Are you going to give only appreciation or the capital also? If you're going to use it for some other purpose, what time horizon do you have? So based on your investment objective and time horizon, I'll be able to define an asset allocation for you. Undoubtedly, I will advise her to invest in mutual funds.
I understand. I don't think she's going to ask you. She'll probably ask your mother and get the right advice. Buy gold for your daughters. Simpler decision to make. Okay. We have a couple of questions to go through. And then I want to spend some time on India. I know we're running short on time, but I'll just go through some questions. So you are very well read. Talk to us about what you read and also if there's a global flavor in your reading which helps you make better decisions.
So in reading material, आई एम लाइक सामने समंदर पड़ा है, जितना उठा सकते हो उठा लो. आई रीड इवन टूडे व्हेन आई गेट अ चांस कॉलम लाइक तारक मेहता ना दुनिया ने उंधा चश्मा. व्हेन आई वाज किड आई यूज्ड टू रीड दैट इन चित्रलेखा गुजराती मैगजीन. आई वाज अ गुजराती मीडियम स्टूडेंट सो दैट वाज वन इंटरेस्टिंग वे टू लर्न गुजराती. Now I hardly use Gujarati, you know, in speaking or writing, and yet I read that. I also read commercial and business magazines, reports. I read research reports prepared by my team as well as outsiders. I read Bloomberg, Reuters, various kind of articles. I'm part of many WhatsApp groups where there are many learned people sharing their knowledge. So my objective is simple: read as much as possible, read as quickly as possible, and on an average I'll still be spending 2 to 3 hours a day in reading.
Wow, that's nice.
And most important thing you know is humbleness. If you don't understand something, please feel grow to go out and ask more things. In my WhatsApp groups, I have no shame in asking questions when I don't understand anything. In our team meet, I have no shame in asking that, look, I don't understand what this is. For example, right now, electric vehicle and hydrogen, these are big things. My knowledge is limited. Yesterday evening, we were in front of India's one of the largest automobile company, giving them gyan on electric vehicle and hydrogen. Now, my analysts have prepared it. And by witnessing their exchange, I could also learn something. Yeah. So keep eyes and ears open to acquire knowledge.
Always be learning. Nice. Okay. Now let's talk India. And this is the reason I want to focus on India is because I don't think I have seen anyone articulate a view on what's happening in India and what could happen better than what I've heard from you on other forums. So a lot of people believe that, you know, India had reforms in the early 90s. And that gave us a boost. But they also, but I guess it's generally agreed that we stalled at some point in time. And there's been, you know, on off growth kind of thing. So the GDP numbers would say we continue to grow. But I don't think India was rocking big time after the initial few years of the reforms. We, of course, had a, we had growth related to capital movements like 2003, 4, 5, 6, 7. My point is that a lot of people believe that the change that has happened in India in the last several years and the growth trajectory that we can see ahead, we may not see it in the recent past, but we can see ahead is for real. And it's not uncommon to hear that this time it's different. There's something genuinely happening in India. So talk to us about how you're seeing India and give us like a 10-year view on what you think is possible and what could happen in India from here on.
So when I started my career, Indian GDP and market cap was roughly $300 billion. Last year, we were at $3 trillion market cap and GDP, roughly. It's a 10x growth in 30 years. Now, in this 30 years, we had done liberalization, we have built infrastructures, we have created digital economy. So if the same growth is maintained, I will go from 3 trillion to 30 trillion over next 30 years. And if I can reap benefits of what I have done in last 30 years, it may happen even faster. Now, this is the broad theme. There's no guarantee that we will be $30 trillion economy in 2052. It may happen in 2045. It may happen in 2055. But directionally, the journey is 3 to 6, 6 to 12, 12 to 24, and 24 to 36. This is happening because we have democracy where decisions are taken collectively. We are not like Russia where the largest private sector oil company's chairman fell down from a hospital window and died. He's the eighth businessman to die in such suspicious manner. We are not like China, where a private sector company's chairman, founder can be removed because state orders. We are also, you know, having demography, young people, aspirational population. Third, we have built infrastructure, our power, our roads, our ports, our railway network, our telecom network. It's available. Okay. Now you don't have to wait for 10 years to get your telephone line. Now you don't have to book your railway tickets well in advance. You are getting opportunities. I'm not saying that we have resolved our all problems, but we have improved. The digital economy, we are probably the best in the world. We recently saw German minister saying that, look, I can't process more than 100,000 transactions a day to transfer money from German government to needy German citizens. Well, heck, in India, we transferred 10 crore transactions under PM Kisan Samman Yojana, and we do it every quarter. So our digital infrastructure, our democracy, our demographic dividend, our infrastructure buildup, the reforms which we have done over the last 30 years, they are all creating a journey of 3 trillion to 30 trillion. Now, destination, direction is clear. The destination may vary by a few years here or there. And that's the opportunity of India. And I'll sum up India's aspiration in just one line. Forget entrepreneurs of India and forget top managerial professionals. I'm talking about Amul, a cooperative society owned by farmers. They employ people from rural background. They are the finest in the world. Forget India. They are not necessarily paid like private sector professionals. So they have serious limitation of compensation, but they get motivated people. They get dedicated people. For decades, Amul is India's largest FMCG company. This year, they ended the year with 61,000 crore turnover. Globally, when cooperative society makes 100 rupee, they transfer between 35 to 40 rupee to consumers, to members. Amul transfers 85 rupee to members. Despite that, they have 61,000 crore turnover. Or maybe because of that, they have 61,000 crore turnover. And now Amul is saying that by 2047, we will be the world's largest food company, having 18 lakh crore turnover. I was always taking pride that Amul is outperforming Hindustan Lever. Here, Amul is trying to set goals of outperforming Unilever itself. This is the aspirational India. There are many, many, many Amul kind of aspirations in rest of the world, rest of India. And those entrepreneurs, if you back, those businesses, if you back, I'm sure you will participate in this $3 to $30 trillion journey.
Yeah, I think that's very well articulated, Nilesh. So one question that typically comes up is, what could go wrong in this? What should one be watchful of when you're thinking ahead for India?
So one, be always ready for volatility. There were many people who took advantage of March 20 correction. And there were few people who got panicked when they realized that my SIP returns for 3 years are negative. Here is Nilesh by talking about do SIP, do SIP, do SIP. And for 3 years, he hasn't delivered any return. It's painful. Some people panicked and redeemed. They couldn't control their behavior of fear. And hence they suffered. The same people who stayed invested, today they are earning double-digit return. So first worry is behavior. Will you be able to balance your greed and fear? Will you be able to buy in correction? Will you be able to withstand the volatility? The second thing is something happening in the country. Today, our judicial infrastructure is overburdened. We are not necessarily top of the rank in terms of our judicial infrastructure, judicial process. Now, capital flows where there is rule of law. capital will move out if there is no rule of law. The sanctity of contract needs to be established. Clearly, we have a work to do. The second thing is related to ease of doing business. Mm-hmm. If you look at our Bharat Ratnas, only Mr. J.R.D. Tata has got a Bharat Ratna. Yeah. But there are so many businessmen and industrialists who have contributed to make India a $3 trillion economy. We don't respect business. And that's visible in our law, where there are thousands of rules and regulations and compliance burden. That's also reflected down below on the ground. I remember an episode about John F. Kennedy. When he visited NASA, he asked a janitor, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Sir, I'm working to put a man on the moon." A janitor having pride that he's cleaning toilets so that men can go to the moon. That's the commitment to the goal. When my tax inspector, when my government employee believes that by supporting business, he is helping India reach $30 trillion economy, ease of doing business will get achieved. We have improved a lot, but we still have a long distance to cover. So as long as we manage and respect our businessmen and support them, and there is rule of law, I think India growth story is irreversible.
You mentioned Bharat Ratna. I think one person who should be given the Bharat Ratna right away is Mr. Nandan Nilekani.
Undoubtedly.
What a system he's built. Oh my Absolutely. God. What a brilliant system.
He deserves two Bharat Ratnas, one for Aadhaar, one for ONDC.
ONDC I missed that.
So there is a new platform coming which will connect consumers of India to sellers of India.
Okay.
So that platform is be a game changer. So no one
directly,
in the world has that.
Directly selling to the consumer.
Absolutely.
And the companies can be any company that can be on the platform who wants to.
Even I can also sell our product, and you and I can also buy product.
And that's being like Nandan's part of that, is running that?
That's a brainchild of Nandan Nilekani. So he deserves two Bharat Ratnas, not just one.
I'm with you. I'm with you. So I know we are way ahead of time that we had planned. Nilesh, it's been a fantastic, fantastic conversation. I had not expected anything less. I must, however, make a final request. You've gone through this entire discussion without a single analogy about cricket. Now, someone's going to put a gun to my head and say, "What's wrong with you? You spoke to Nilesh. What happened to the cricket?" So anything that you want to leave us with?
So again, let's look at someone like Sachin Tendulkar or Virat Kohli or Rohit Sharma. They are all very, very gifted batsmen. They are all very talented players. And they have the ability to hit every ball for a 4 or a 6 or a run. And yet many a times they spend so much time on the crease without scoring. Now, do you think with that enormous talent and capabilities, they should let a ball go without scoring a run? Or they should take a risk and hit it out for 4 and 6? If Rohit Sharma or Virat Kohli or Tendulkar would have done that, they would not have become Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli or Tendulkar. They waited for bad balls to hit and score run. Otherwise, they just ensured that the wicket was not lost. The same thing is true in investment. You have to be in the game. Don't lose your wicket. If you don't score runs, if you don't generate return, doesn't matter. Just stay invested. Eventually, a half volley come, which you can hit for a 4 or a 6. So time on the pitch will always make money for you rather than timing.
Wonderful. On that note, Nilesh, thank you very much.
Thank you. And wish very happy Diwali to all your viewers.
Wish you the same too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Investor Hour. I'm very excited to hear what you have to say about this episode or the podcast in general. Be sure to write to me at info@equitymaster.com. That's info@equitymaster.com. Thank you once again and see you at the next edition of the Investor Hour.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.